All right, quick public service announcement before you listen to episode 3 of the Rambo series podcast season 2 and our continuing coverage of Rambo First Blood Part 2 with Derek Wayne Johnson, who was kind enough to come on the show. This episode was recorded not a long time ago, but about a month or so ago. The next few episodes are recorded when I had some extra time, so they were recorded kind of close to each other. So just keep that in mind if any news seems quote-unquote out of date. One such piece of news is Derek hinted at or couldn't really be full disclosure on a project he was working with James Rolfe of the Angry Video Game and Cinemassacre fandom that has since been released. During this guest spot with Derek, we talked about it, but we weren't clear because at that time he wasn't able to say exactly what it was because it hadn't been announced yet or hadn't been released yet. So anyways, that's what he's referring to. So the link for that amazing video project or documentary where James and Derek basically go to find the locations in Rocky IV is in the description show notes. So I'll put that in there. Also, I guess I can say it, in the near future, stand by, either be on this podcast or the other one I do on the Rocky series called One More Round, the Rocky series podcast. Mr. James Rolfe and Derek will be interviewed by me together talking about that project and anything else they want to talk about, Rocky, Rambo, you name it. So that will happen. I think I'm allowed to say that. Oh well, if I'm not, shame on me. Lastly, Derek also does at the end of this episode kind of a Q&A regarding the Instagram drama that Sly was going through regarding Erwin Winkler and what have you. Just keep that in mind that that's why it seems not out of date, but a little bit out of date. So there you go. I try to keep these shows evergreen, but every now and then news comes out in the real world that gets addressed and talked about because we're all Sly fans and Rambo and Rocky fans, all that stuff. So there you go. Enjoy the episode. Thank you so much, Derek. You're the best. Nobody like you. Welcome to another episode of It's a Long Road, the Ramble Series podcast. I am very excited today because I have with me a very special guest host for today's episode, Derek Wayne Johnson. How are you doing today?
I'm great, man. How are you doing?
Doing very well. It's good to see you. How are you enjoying your summer? The time of this recording, it's summertime.
It's hot, but, I'm enjoying it. It's been a while since you and I have done anything quite like this. Well, we've never done anything like this together.
Yeah, let's talk about this. So there's people listening to this episode who haven't heard my Rocky podcast because they're actually Sly fans who are just Rambo fans who aren't necessarily Rocky fans, so they haven't gone and listened to the Rocky podcast. So on my Rocky podcast called Going the Distance, Derek, you guested, or I interviewed you four times for four different projects. What is your fandom / history with Sylvester Stallone? Do you want to kind of briefly talk about that, the extensive history?
So first of all, I also have to point out, I came prepared.
Nice, love that shirt. That's awesome.
It's so old, it doesn't even fit. But anyway, I did, for those that don't know, as Ryan said, I directed a few documentaries, worked on a few documentaries with Sly. First one being John G. Avildsen, King of the Underdogs, about the director of Rocky and the Karate Kid. And then Sly and I did 40 Years of Rocky, The Birth of a Classic. Then Stallone, Frank That Is. So I directed those three, and then I edited The Making of Rocky versus Drago for Sly.
That's awesome.
And I'm also doing a little project right now that's really cool that you'll find out soon enough. So I just kind of have a working history with Sly and obviously a fan of Rocky and Rambo and just the whole Stallone thing. So that's how you and I met, was for the first documentary. You hit me up to do an interview for King of the Underdogs, and we just became buds.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it works out.
It's been an honor and a privilege to become a fan of your work and become a friend of yours. Yeah, I just, it's amazing this community that has happened because of podcasting and the fandom of Stallone's work. And it's just, I never dreamed when I first started this podcasting business, I don't mean like that, but like hobby 6 years ago that I would make friends and make acquaintances with such great people. And Derek, you're certainly, I'd say you're in the top three, top four. Now that I said four, I don't want to say where you place in that, but you know, no, I'm just joking. You're definitely one of the top people I've met, just not because of your work with Sly, because of you. You're just a good person and you're incredible talent, and I love your work. And no, but last time we talked, you were working on your own film.
Right, yeah, that's one thing that people get confused, that they think I just do documentaries, in particular, like Stallone documentaries. We made my latest feature film called Bloodstreams, which is coming out next year. It stars Yuji Okamoto from Karate Kid 2 and Cobra Kai.
Nice.
Han Soto from Cobra Kai. We shot that last year. We wanted it to come out this year, but with independent features, sometimes you gotta wait.
Yeah.
We hope to turn it into a trilogy. That would be really nice.
That's awesome. And now I can't wait to see that. And we talked about that on one of our four interviews. I'm going to send a link in the show notes to this one of all the four interviews you did with me so people can go check those out. Because a lot of great stories from you about Sly, a lot of great Sly stories, insight, background. I mean, it's just amazing. If you're a Sylvester Stallone fan and or Rocky fan, I highly recommend those interviews. You gave me some stories and stuff that I re-listening to them, but there's just amazing background that you've given me there. Are you not able to talk about the project that's sort of not a secret anymore? I you know which one I'm talking about. Are you not allowed to say anything? Or it was on Facebook, so
yeah, no, I can't say details about it. Okay. But for those of you who know James Rolfe, the angry video game nerd of Cinemassacre, he and I just recently went out and did a Rocky IV location tour video that will be on the Cinemassacre channel soon. James has been a friend of mine for a few years. I actually was on his show about 5 years ago to talk about King of the Underdogs. And yeah, he's just a great guy. And I've known about this for about a year and a half, and then we finally executed it. And Sly knows about it, and he thinks we're nuts. But he was really cool and really like helpful and whatnot. So it's going to be coming out. I can't talk about it. I wouldn't want to spoil that for James. Yeah, it's going to be fun. I don't know when it's going to drop, but hopefully soon.
I had the opportunity and the honor of actually interviewing James in the early days of my podcasting. He took a chance on me and my brother. I'll talk to you offline, but I feel like it wasn't the best interview. I wasn't good at interviewing yet. He was really gracious, and he was really, I listened back to that interview and I cringe a little bit because like, I'm hoping he gives me another chance. Maybe when you guys promote this thing, you'll come on together or separately. I don't know, but, I'll talk to you more offline, but I really hope, James, if you're listening to this, I apologize. It was 4 or 5 years ago when I interviewed you. I'm better now. You know, we all grow, grow and learn and what have you.
Everybody needs a warm up period. So
yeah,
you're good.
I know. Well, I don't know if I'm much better, but anyways. Okay, well, what is your background with Rambo? Like, what's your fandom with the Rambo series, with First Blood Part 2 in particular? But do you like the series, or what's going on here, Derek?
Honestly, I was a Rambo fan before Rocky, because that was in the order of what I grew up watching, I think. As a matter of fact, some of my family members when I was a kid called me Rambo just because I was, like, obsessed. I was born in 83. The Rambo movies were just, you know, obviously Part 1 was 82, and then Part 2, 85, Part 3, 88. So, prime Rambo experience as a kid. I had, like, the Rambo tricycle, the Rambo bazooka, the Rambo gun, which I still have, the action figures, the whole thing. And I thought I was Rambo, and it really, First Blood, you knew was a really great film, even as a kid. But you always watched Rambo 2, because it was awesome. And then Rambo 3, if it was just on, let's be honest. But still a fun film. It was just a part of my life. You know me, Ryan, I'm not like a crazed fan. I'm a filmmaker who has influences, and certainly First Blood and was one of them. As a matter of fact, I got on VHS like the Rambo trilogy when they put it out in the mid-90s.
Right.
But before that, I only had First Blood taped off of NBC, its network television premiere in 1985 that my mother recorded. And I watched that tape with commercials for like 20 years.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, I actually told Sly that one. He thought that was hilarious.
Hey, do you remember any of the commercials that were on there in 85?
I don't remember, but obviously I got the VHSs, then I got the Blu-ray, excuse me, the DVDs. And so like I haven't watched that tape in so long, so I don't remember. But that was huge for me. Let's talk about Sly. Like I actually found pictures of me back then and I would send them to him, like me holding the Rambo bazooka or the tricycle or whatever. And he just thought that was hilarious.
Do you still have those pictures?
I didn't think to prepare.
I can add it to the video if you don't mind sharing. I can put it on the video that'll go on YouTube. We can show the people those pictures.
Yeah, I've got a few of them, and awesome. You know, Sly approved.
There you go.
And then I have a really cool Rambo 2 story coming up that I'll share with you. I probably told you about it. Like, there was an object from the film that I've held in my hand, which is cool.
Right, that's right. If you want to share, you can share it now. This would be a good time to share it. Yeah.
So one day I'm at Frank Stallone's house and he just has like memorabilia everywhere. Like he's got Rocky stuff, like, you know, the original stuff, Rocky stuff, Rambo stuff, whatever. One day I was just down in his office, which is on the basically it's like a basement, but it's like an office. I just look over amongst all this stuff and I see an arrow. And I walk over to it. It's just loose, like in his house, like leaned up against a shelf or something. I go, can I pick this up? And I picked it up and I go, Frank, is this an original Rambo 2 explosive arrow? He goes, oh yeah. It was just plastic. The explosive tip that he screws on, obviously that was real, or not real, but metal. But the dummy arrow, it was just plastic and it was all one piece. Obviously he screws it on, that's all metal, yada yada yada. The dummy arrow was just one solid piece of, and then it had this plastic tip and it was painted, and I'm like holding the dummy arrow that Sly pulls back and whatnot, and I was just like, and it's just loose in Frank's house. It's pretty wild.
That is awesome. I love that you've touched a real and a very iconic, I mean, other than the knife, the Rambo knife, I would say the explosive arrows, it's pretty iconic in the Rambo film, especially part two. Great payoff. Unfortunately, not the scene that we're covering today, but a great payoff later in the film of that arrow being used. I love it. I think that arrow scene for me as a young lad, when I first saw the film, I think it sticks out for everyone. You know, yeah, I don't think I ever saw a person get blown up before, you know, on film. It's a great moment.
And the sound effects of the arrow itself are just,
that's
out
right.
Of this world. So,
that's right. Whatever that sound is, yeah. It kind of makes that kind of weird wind. You know, it's a great sound effect. Do you know for the soundtrack, this is just one fan talking to another, you know, in the great theme throughout the movie by Jerry Goldsmith, the iconic Rambo 2 theme with that doon-doon-doon sound, that kind of doon-doon-doon. Do you know what instrument makes that sound or how they get that kind of weird?
I don't, actually. That's a great question. It's clearly, it sounds like it has strings, right?
Okay. I don't know. I'm a terrible instrument guy. Someone did mention something on the previous Discord, if they're in there now, you can tell us again. I forget what they called it. Some sort of, you know, the song Sweet Emotion by Aerosmith?
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that same kind of instrument might have been used for that.
Oh, I know. Okay. I saw Aerosmith in concert, so I remember actually. Yes, I can see actually, if I remember correctly, Steven Tyler was the one. He would turn away from the crowd and he would do whatever that was. I'm talking out loud here because the memory's hitting me.
No, of course.
But I remember him creating that sound on stage when I saw Aerosmith. So we're getting closer. We're getting closer to figuring out what that instrument was.
Dave in our Discord, it was him. He said he called it a vibra slap.
Makes sense.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So there you go. Cool. So I got to Google what that looks like. The people who are listening to our chat right now, there's a few of you here. We welcome you to the Discord. If you're watching this on YouTube, I encourage you to join our Discord of the Last of the Action Heroes podcast. Join our Discord. So when we do these recordings of Rambo and Rocky on my other podcast, you can join the discussion live, talk to the guest host or talk to me. Today is obviously a very special guest with Derek. So the few that are here, you have that privilege of seeing Derek live. If you have questions for Derek right now, I think you got one that just came in. Save them for the end if Derek has the time and he's able to say what he's able to say. You know, he can't share everything. If you have any kind of questions for him, I know he'll feel free to answer those questions. But we'll save it to the end. So what we're going to do now is we are going to roll into the coverage of the film. We were just told by Murdoch to Colonel Troutman in the film that Rambo has 36 hours, okay? He's got 36 hours to do his mission. Murdoch could care less if he's alive or dead. Troutman had to twist his arm and say, come on, we owe him 36 hours. Let's give it to him. You know, it's Rambo we're talking about. Now, Rambo didn't land where he was supposed to land. They do address it later in the scene. You'll see it come up, but they do subtly address it because right away we see Rambo running kind of fast. So we get the indication that he's got to make up some ground. I mean, right there, that shot of him climbing the rocks. I love the cinematic aesthetic of this second film. What are your thoughts on just how the, we're going to get to all the jungle scenes, but just overall, like how, what is your, cause you're a film guy, like what do you think of the tones or the film texture of part two?
I'm so glad you asked that, cause earlier this morning I had it on, you know, to prep for this. And as a refresher, obviously, First Blood is beautiful. That is so rich. The colors and everything. It's just, you know, obviously a perfect film. Rambo 2 has a different look altogether. They have that gauzed over look and it just has this steamy jungle appearance. And the shot, the previous shot of the rocks and whatnot, there's a lot of scope here, but also it has like a very muggy feel to it. It's sweaty, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Really was intentional to give you that jungle feeling.
And how would they do that? How would they give that film, I want to say foggy, but it's that weird, it almost looks like you can see the humidity on film. How would they do that?
So a couple things. One, clearly it's intentional, but sometimes it may not be. So sometimes your lenses will fog over due to the temperature and you may need to just wait sometimes, you know, 45 minutes for a lens to kind of defog. But if you want it to be intentionally, sometimes you can shoot with that lens a little foggy. That's one. Two, back in the old days, they would put Vaseline on the lens. So there's all sorts of other kind of gauze type filters that you could physically do in camera. And nowadays we just do it in post, obviously.
Right.
So there's a couple different ways that they could have achieved that.
Okay. Awesome. And I love how, I do love how the Rambo character, I don't know how to say a Rambo character. I love how Rambo was already wearing his headband around his head. Look, it's sweaty. I get it. I mean, it's a headband. And I've always said, if style was not a thing, if I had like no pride, I do a lot of jogging and it gets hot in the summer. And when I jog, I bring a little like cloth in my hand and I'll do the wipe as I jog. So I just have a cloth in my hand as I jog and I wipe because the sweat will come down my face, on my sunglasses. So that's what the headband stops you from doing. I get it. It's aesthetically, I'm not Rambo, and nobody wears headbands anymore. Like, let's be honest, how many times do you see people jogging with headbands? It's just back in the 70s and 80s, absolutely. But you don't do it anymore, so maybe I should start the movement of, like, making headbands great again.
I think you should. I mean, you have, in one, he wears just, like, the tan-looking one that he works from the, can't think of the material. Then there's the black one. Then we know what's coming up, the iconic red one.
Right.
So you have three to choose from as far as Rambo is concerned.
Yeah, I just can't pull it off. It also keeps his luscious hair out of his eyes a little bit. So, you know. Now that was his real hair, I assume. Was it? Because he released Rocky IV and Rambo II the same year. I guess the film order, did he grow the hair for one and cut it for the other?
I'm pretty sure he did Rambo 2 first and then cut it for Rocky 4.
I guess that would make more sense between films to kind of grow it long film and then cut your hair for the other. Yeah, okay, right.
Yeah. There's that foggy look.
Now, that's actually not Rambo. That's Stallone just doing his morning workout, and they just got it on camera. It's between takes. Like, hey, we should probably just use that in the film. It just got Stallone running around the jungle, keeping in shape. Because that guy never stops. Doesn't he always, like, work out between scenes and do push-ups and squeezes his arm thing or whatever?
Yeah. We highlight that in the making of Rocky versus Drago, where he's squeezing the clip. I mean, yeah, he just won't stop. He won't settle down.
So there's a scene coming up here where, of course, Rambo, you know, he's been dropped. I love this little moment. He's getting his coordinates, and, of course, he's checking his compass. He's checking his bearings. He wants to get to where the drop zone was supposed to be. But I love how he takes out the compass from the bottom of his knife. And this was a big thing. And I actually had a knife. I had a Rambo knife. I think a lot of kids did. It was a cheap knockoff, you know, crappy one. But it had a compass on the bottom, a little bulbous compass with liquid, and it spun. I think it might have pointed north. I don't know. I'm sure his is probably a little bit better. Okay, so he's going to pull out the knife, check the compass, and this is a... Come on, this is very 80s. This is a very 80s moment, what we're about to see here. So we got a snake coming over his shoulder.
You noticed that wasn't him? I just noticed it for the first time in my life. On the first shot of the snake.
Oh. Well, if it's a real snake next to a...
Yeah. As you think about it, like, it right... Play it real quick.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Right there. Pretty sure that's a double, and then they would have... Yeah, you could tell that doesn't look like Sly.
Oh.
And then for the shot of him holding it, obviously they cut back to you, and that's Sly.
Yeah, that is, because if it was Sly, they would have more of the face showing. Why not? If you're going to stand there anyways, why not just be more of like Sly profile with the snake there? Why not?
Absolutely. I think that's his double, no doubt.
That's Frank Stallone. Frank Stallone is expendable. He can have his face bent.
Again, I could be wrong, but I don't think I am.
I don't think you are. Good eye. And, of course, Rambo kills the snake, and PETA now has written to the show saying, how dare you glorify the killing of snake? I assume it was a rubber snake. I assume it wasn't a real snake. I highly doubt Stallone grabbed a real snake and choked the life out of it. But I could be wrong.
Right.
You know, he did want to kill a real boar in first blood, apparently. Now, apparently, First Blood Part 2 was filmed in Mexico.
Yeah, I believe it was.
So those statues that we see there, those kind of like, I don't know which religious personalities they are of. Are you familiar with the culture in Vietnam or what religion they are? Or?
I would assume Buddhist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those were probably just clearly styrofoam kind of mock-ups that they made and shipped in.
I love how they're just scattered throughout the jungle, you know, these random statues.
Yeah, shrines.
I mentioned in the previous episode, and I forgot how much Rambo does wear this black kind of jacket shirt. I love how he looks. He's got the black headband with the black jacket. He'll eventually take it off because he has to expose, you know, his workout. He can't do the workout and not have his arms and chest showing throughout the movie. Yeah, I know it's hot, but come on, you know, let's be honest here. He wants to show off his physique.
Have you noticed that he never wears camouflage? He never wears camo. We assume the 80s, you know, camo. Like, he doesn't really wear camo, right?
No.
In any of the...
That is interesting. It's funny, back in the 80s, I don't know if you remember, you're a little younger than me, but back in the 80s, camouflage pants was very in vogue, like, and they were expensive. I never had a pair because it was too expensive for my parents to buy. We had four boys, right? So if one boy had it, we had to buy four pairs. But it was very, if you wore camouflage pants, you were cool.
Right.
He's like sensing a presence in the jungle. He's not alone. Yeah, I love all these shrines of these deities. It's pretty cool. It's a really cool aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
To give you the indication that he truly is in a foreign land again. And now we'll play out the sequence here, but just for our listeners, of course, at home who are not watching this on YouTube, we have a character in the background who seems to be shadowing Rambo. Rambo senses the individual. The individual knows that Rambo's there, so it's a bit of a cat and mouse game between these two individuals. Let's see how it plays out. We get a little indication here, of course, of Rambo's stealth abilities, right? This is showing you how stealthy he can be in the jungle. Like a cat. Why don't we talk about the character Ko Bao, played by Julia Nixon. First off, can I just say she's gorgeous? I mean, I think we all can agree. We get why Rambo gets smitten right away.
She actually said one time, if you've seen the special features of the making of and whatnot, she says that this was a rare occurrence where the man was better looking than the woman. Sorry, Julia Nixon. You couldn't be more wrong.
Yeah. Like,
she looks great.
She's stunning. And unfortunately is the right word. I mean, she's had a career. I just look at her filmography here and it's just nothing really pops out. I mean, she has a lot of guest appearances, TV work. I mean, you can have a great career doing TV work. I would love to be a character actor in TV shows. You know, you go from, she's been in Star Trek, she's been in like Kung Fu, she was in Crime Story, Airwolf, Magnum PI, Chicago Hope, JAG, Nash Bridges, Days of Our Lives, even Castle. Her last TV guest appearance was 2016. Her last film was 2018. So she's had a career, but her first film was this film. And
Wow. Yeah,
so what a great get for your first film, but oddly enough, it never, and maybe, and I hate to say it because she's Asian and this was the 80s. It's too bad she didn't get discovered now with this, how she looks now, because, well, we know diversity in film is much more now. You know what I mean? It's just too bad that it just never popped later in her career, but because she popped early back when casting Asians wasn't really didn't happen a lot in Hollywood for big time films. So maybe I'm wrong, but she should have been a bigger actress is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I agree. It is unfortunate, but you know, women like herself, you know, the pioneers that led up to this point where we are when it comes to diversity in Hollywood. So I hope she knows that for many, many fans, she's an icon, you know, certainly for us.
For many, young boys, she's like, I fell in love with her in the film, man.
Absolutely. I mean, she's recently my friend on Facebook or as of the last years, but we never speak or anything, but it was just because it's like I saw Julia Nixon's name on the People You May Know and I'm like, click, you know what I mean? Because like to us, she's definitely iconic and again a beauty of our childhood and still is.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Louise in our chat said that he thinks that she might be the hottest woman of Sly's movies.
That's accurate.
Yeah, and he said some cute ones back in there. I mean, I hate to say the prime. We're all in our prime at some point, but, you know, Sandra Bullock, Demolition Man was very cute. Sharon Stone is a gorgeous woman. I mean, he's had some great, Madeline Stowe, even Avenging Angelo. Terrible film, but Madeline Stowe was a gorgeous woman in that film. So a lot of competition, but yeah, definitely, Julia Nixon would be up there in that discussion. That's awesome.
I'm going to have to go with Julia Nixon.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I like it. All right, so they have their introductions here. I don't speak Vietnamese. I don't know. Maybe they're exchanging deets for later. I'm not sure what they're saying here.
Hong Ding Hong Ding Ya. Doi Tang An Lam Mo Chong Yin Tai Yu Ki Ko Lai De.
Doi Tang Mi.
Who knows what they said there, but she did start with Rambo. You know, that's a good indication. I might know who you are, because I really don't think anyone else in this area would just happen to know that my name's Rambo. So, but she continues the conversation in Vietnamese all the same. What are your thoughts on the reason why she spoke Vietnamese to him instead of just continue with English, if this was supposed to be her American counterpart as well?
You know, that's interesting. I've never questioned it. I think you just raised a good question. Clearly, that was a choice in the script. I don't know. I don't have any wisdom on that one, but that's actually a good point that you raised. Like, why, if she has a knife to her, a knife is raised, why wouldn't she speak English to a known American?
Yeah.
But it could be also that maybe she knows that there's a Soviet presence and he could be a Soviet, so she's not going to just immediately speak English. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Did not expect a woman, no.
We better go.
Now, I love that. That's, you know, you didn't expect a woman, no. And, of course, we, the audience, didn't as well. This is actually very... speaking of the 80s, we have an Asian actress for American Hollywood type film. She's going to be the sidekick to the Rambo character. Stallone has actually always been very forward about his casting, you know, with Apollo Creed, you know, to have his counterparts to not be white. Now he's got an Asian female. Like, you got a hand to Sly. He's always been very good about kind of forward in Hollywood with his casting and writing choices. But I will say, within the film, it doesn't make sense. But what I'm getting at is because if he's being briefed on who he needs to meet, your one contact, you would probably give all the information, like being in the, again, being in the military that I'm in, you would brief the individual, she's female, she's 23 years old, you know, she's 5'2", whatever it is, like you, this is who you're going to, she'll be wearing this and she'll be XYZ. So in your code words, that's the other thing, they're probably speaking code to each other. Like in the military, we have, like, if you're out doing an operation and you have a contact with somebody, I give you a code word, you give one back to me. So I know that you're part of the same team. So that's might have been what they were doing there. You think they would have told, hey, by the way, your contact's a female. So don't be surprised by that. But for the audience purposes, yeah, that's the reveal.
The screenplay by Sylvester and James Cameron, and they're actually not military men as yourself. Clearly, I'm sure they had an advisor, technical advisor, but I think also it's just a movie. And that's the thing that, like, you have to, with these type of films, you have to remember, it's not Platoon, it's Rambo.
Yeah, of course, I know.
But at the same time, for us fans, it's like, we want to know, like, why? And so you have a good point there that maybe, because you are a military man, that maybe that was the code. And it's interesting that wasn't for the audience, maybe. That was for them. Also, it heightens that her first English line, you weren't expecting a woman, huh? So, yeah, they probably said their code, they met, now they know who each other are, and then they move on.
Love it.
I go to river. How come you're so late?
Got hung up.
You got hung up. You get it? He was hanging on the plane. That's what.
I have arranged boats to take you downriver. Old way is not safe. You come a long way, Rambo, to see empty camp.
So she's already indicated that she too feels that the camp is empty. So I guess they've done a good job hiding the prisoners, because she's a local and she's saying that, hey, where we're going, there are no prisoners there, and she has no reason to lie. So I guess to the credit of the Vietnamese holding those prisoners of war, I have done a good job hiding it from the public, because even the locals haven't seen them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you just can't beat real jungle for filming. This is not a set. This is the jungles of Mexico.
And I think if it were shot nowadays, it just would have found a way to make it look so fake and overdone. And this is just, you can feel this. You can reach out and touch this jungle, like Predator.
Yeah.
Real jungle.
Yeah.
Also in Mexico. I mean, you look at this stuff, you know, a location manager had to go out and, you know, and the director, they had to find these locations. And boy, did they do a good job.
Nothing beats real. And I know with today's films, it doesn't happen as much as it should. You just know the difference when you go back and watch the 80s films and 70s films. You definitely get the real aesthetic. It just feels grittier. That's the word, grittier. It just, when it's real, it's grittier. They've arrived at the riverboat. It's run by pirates. So Rambo goes, you're using pirates? And she basically says, well, yeah, because we're not bugged as much. The pirates, you know, are kind of their own army. We're not bugged as much by the other army. So that kind of makes sense. But you see they have hubcaps here. You know, they're selling hubcaps. Looks like they're selling, you know, weapons and what have you. But you'll notice here when we go up a little bit in time in the film here, there's a laser disc box. And I was surprised by that. Yeah, watch. It's coming up. So she says the army isn't as suspicious. Right here, you've got, right there, a laser disc. Is that a laser disc or, maybe it's Lasonic. Oh, okay.
Oh, it is Lasonic.
Lasonic.
Yeah.
I don't know what Lasonic is. Maybe somebody in your Discord can Google Lasonic for me and tell me in Discord what that is, just so I don't wreck my recording here. Google Lasonic and see what kind of, maybe it looks like a Ghetto Blaster box maybe or something like that. I'm not sure. Okay. But yeah, so they're selling different stuff or whatever.
Yeah. It's interesting. Still a good eye.
Yeah, I love that kind of stuff, the background stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, because I thought 85 would have been too early for laser disc, but I could be wrong.
Chaka-an.
I wait.
So they're greeting the pirates. I guess the captain's going to come out and talk to them, and they're going to have a cash exchange here. So the cash exchange happens, but check out this guy's teeth. I always wondered, did they cover this actor's teeth, or does this guy just have bad teeth? I've always wondered about this kind of stuff. Look at his teeth here. Ugh.
Ooh, I don't know. I always laughed at how he was dressed. The tight shirt that we'll see here in a little bit. It's kind of funny.
So these guys are showing you here, Rambo's looking around the camp. Obviously, he feels unsafe, and it's unsettling because pirates would be unpredictable, of course. They're all holding weapons, so even if Rambo's in a bind, if you think about it, because Rambo could probably take out a few guys before he's get taken, but he's surrounded by pirates all holding weapons.
And headbands. And more headbands.
Yeah, they're wearing VP's headbands.
He looks like Rambo with the necklace and the pose and everything.
He's the Vietnamese Rambo.
There you go.
And of course they're showing you there's a girl, a young lady, washing up in a basin and she's topless, but she's holding a towel to indicate, of course, this, you know, they probably run prostitution, everything here, right? It's everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they do the cash exchange, count it. It looks like a good bunch of cash.
American dollars, by the way. Looks like.
Yeah, it looks like American, yeah. So nothing really happens. They get on the boat and they continue down the river. I love how they say the old ways aren't safe anymore. I don't know what she meant by that, but maybe the roadways or pathways weren't safe, but I guess the water is. But so the captain comes down here and he's going to hit on her, offer alcohol, touches her hair, and Rambo does a pretty good thing here. He knows that this guy obviously is a creep. He interrupts the conversation by distracting them, which I think was a good on his part.
A day. On the come.
Eh? What about patrol boats?
Antoine home.
Eh? Oh!
And that's the shirt I was talking about. He's got the tied knot and everything that the captain has. It's kind of funny.
That's awesome.
Doesn't look too threatening.
No. So the captain was about, you know, was kind of hitting on the girl, but Rambo does a good job. Just, what about the patrol boats? You know, I don't think he really cares, but it was a way to distract the captain. And he seemed pretty happy to show them, look, I've got a rocket launcher. And then, of course, he shows the rocket launcher, and you say to yourself as a viewer, gee, I wonder if this will come into play later in the film.
It's a great opportunity to show the next little fun object of the movie. Because in one, you introduce the knife. In two, that iconic bazooka shot of Sly. So, yeah.
Is your shirt that you're wearing right now, is that the one with this? Yeah, there it is.
There it is.
That's awesome. So he's showing a rocket launcher, and of course it has Russian lettering on the warhead. Those dirty Russians. They're always causing problems. From 1985 to now, those guys.
Russian.
Right. And I always like that because it kind of shows, obviously, his mind, his intellect, but also he's kind of like a detective in a way.
Great point. The Rambo is not just a beast in the forest and the jungle and war. Like, he's actually clever. He understands things, his surroundings. He's not just a killer. He's a thinker too. We do a quick little cutscene here with Murdoch and Trauma, of course, back to the base camp. And Trauma's looking at, I guess, undeveloped film. That's all they show here. They're kind of just showing that they don't trust each other. Mm-hmm. They don't like each other. Like, I think it's just showing that Trauma's taking the mission seriously, and Murdoch's just biding his time so he doesn't have to go get Rambo, I think is what it might be showing.
Mm-hmm. One thing on Murdoch that always, when I was a little kid, I would kind of get confused because he resembles Brian Dennehy, if you really look at him. If you put Brian Dennehy and Murdoch, Charles Napier together, they would pass as brothers. So in my young 1980s brain, I was like, is that the same guy from One? Oh. Clearly not.
Sure, that's fair. Yeah, when you don't recognize actors' faces so much back when you're younger. Yeah, I can see you probably weren't the only one that might have gotten Dennehy and Charles Napier kind of confused, but good pull there. Ko just asked, you know, are you hungry? And she brought up her little container. I don't know what could have been in there, but and Rob was like, oh, maybe later. Or he said, no, thank you. She says, well, maybe later. Now they're going to have their dinner and date, right? This is like a dinner date. This is their first kind of date together here because we know they fall in love.
Yeah, they do have a rushed Hollywood romance. So
this is their dinner. Now they're going to have their small talk, first date conversation, get to know each other.
How can you get into this?
It's a long story.
Long ride.
She's like, how did you get into this? Long story, long ride. He could have said, well, just watch the first film. Come back to me.
Right. And I love that the captain and one of the pirates is in the background.
Oh, I never caught that.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at them hanging out in the front there of the boat.
Yeah. Oh, and also, I just noticed since you paused it, looks like a possible nude photo up top on the right. Right?
Here?
Yeah. So I think that's what that is. Kind of just shows that, you know, these guys are out there, they're scumbags, and
yeah, there's no Wi-Fi.
There's no Wi-Fi. There you go. Yeah, it's kind of neat, like, pausing it and looking at the different art direction on the film.
We've got a couple of things in our chat here. Dave let us know that the Lasonic thing was a boombox. It was a ghetto blaster, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Donald says he feels bad that I have to edit this episode. I don't feel bad. I'll be okay. But it's what I do. It's why I get paid the big bucks.
Well, after I left the Special Forces, I moved around a lot.
Why you leave on me?
Sorry, I always thought Sly's cadence in this sequel was a little off. Here in the course, the speech at the end, it's like he has these interesting pauses for some reason. I don't know.
I totally agree. I would be interested to hear what Sly's reasoning for that was. The only theory I have with this scene regarding exactly what you're saying, I am talking kind of choppy, and I don't, you know, maybe he's doing a really bad, you know, James Kirk impersonation. I'm not sure, but he is kind of clipping his word. The only thing I can think of is that he's opening up to someone. He hasn't talked to anyone for years since the war in a real way. Other, you know, he broke down, of course, to Troutman at the end of part one. He's been in prison now for a few years. I can't imagine he's had some heart to hearts with those inmates. He's talking to a female probably for the first time in I don't know how long. I think he might have, you know, he's attracted. Look, he's a guy, right? Of course he's attracted to this girl. So I think all this combined, I think he's just having a hard time speaking. He's like, oh yeah, I've got things to say and someone's actually listening to me. She seems to want to know me. And when's the last time anyone's wanted to know him? Like, know who he is?
Right.
Other than, who are you? Why are you here? Why are you carrying this knife? So this is the first time someone's actually, hey, they're actually interested in who I am.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There's another war going on.
What war?
Kind of like a quiet war. War against all the soldiers returning. It's the kind of war you don't win.
I wonder, because he wrote this film, and he took the character from David Morrell and kind of ran with it with these films. He definitely pushes on with the second film in particular about the Vietnam vets and their struggle as returning soldiers for that conflict, because these soldiers had nothing to do with, whether you agree, the same with the Afghanistan war or any of these wars, the soldiers have no control over the political powers that send them. Like, they go where they're sent. They don't agree or disagree with why they're there. They just have to go. That's their job. These soldiers return, and instead of honoring these soldiers, people spit at them, you know, call them baby killers, and they're like, hey, I'm just doing what the government, you know, go be mad at the government, not at me who put my life on the line. But Sly, what's his connection to the war effort? I mean, is he a patriot in real life? Is this a message that Sly carries?
I won't speak
right
for him, but he's clearly a, you know, a red-blooded American, as we say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's Rambo. He didn't serve, but he is obviously an icon of the military within Hollywood. You know, he was of that era. Like, he was in school. He was in college, but he's of the Vietnam era. I mean, he, again, didn't go to Vietnam, but he knew people that did. I think this is his way of kind of honoring them. I mean, this is the ultimate movie to honor POWs and just veterans of this war in a very bombastic Hollywood way, you know.
Of course.
A year later, once again, Platoon came out, and that's the complete opposite of what this film is trying to do. Again, I don't want to speak for him, but he certainly is, like I said, a red-blooded American.
Yeah. No, I want you to officially say, Sly told me, I'll show me the text. Show me the text. I want you to tell me. Yeah, I feel the same way. It's always interesting now as we get older and we understand filmmaking processes, the writing, and the author behind the writing. He must obviously have these sentiments because he plays them so well. The only part of the scene that I would have changed differently, when he talked about how I came back and the war was still going on, a better way to write this scene today, maybe he didn't think of it back then, but now with the mental health that we have and our understanding of mental health, if he had taken the knife and said the war in here, and if he tapped on his head, I think that would have been a more poignant scene, because he was talking about the war at home is still against the civilians and the public and their persona or what they feel about us as soldiers. But if he said, I came back from the war and the war continued, and she's like, what war? And then if he goes, taps the war here, and taps his head.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I think that also would have helped the language barrier as it is to give her a visual. So, yeah, I agree.
The Warren side has said. I mean, I'm not saying I'm a better writer than Sly, but I'm a pretty good script doctor. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Sly, if you want to come to me with any Tulsa King notes and what have you, I'll give you a couple.
Here you go.
It's my problem. How about you? How'd you get into it?
My father worked for intelligence agency. He killed, and I take his place. It's too much death here. Death everywhere. I just want to live, Rambo. Maybe go America. Live the quiet life. What do you want?
To win. Survive.
Okay, so there was a little bit of a hint there that, come on, Rambo, she's kind of flirting with you. Maybe I'll go back to America. Maybe some white knight will take me back to America. She goes, what do you want? Rambo missed an opportunity. He should have said, hey, I want that too. You know, when we survive this thing, let's go to America together. I got a farm we can go to, but oh well. She asks here, what's the reason to survive? What are you getting at here? What are you fighting against? What's going on here?
It's too easy to survive. There's still war here.
Survive a war. You gotta become war.
Is that why they pick you? Because you like to fight?
I'm expendable.
Oh, there you go. Some nerds out there. Expendable? Oh, here we go. I love it. And I wonder if Sly, when he wrote... He's funny this way, because I know I've wondered sometimes, he wrote The Expendables, he created that series, and we know he wrote the dialogue for this film. Was there a part of him when he created The Expendables that he knew that he wrote that I'm expendable in part two of Rambo?
I think he had to have. I mean, it's so iconic. Growing up, that's the only way we knew about that word, expendable. It was because of what this movie, this scene right there, I think everyone knows. And so he had to have known. Yeah, I would think so.
All right. So, so he's about to explain Expendable, which, you know, Rambo, he ain't no dummy. He does a great analogy how to explain Expendable to a foreigner who might, English isn't their first language. So I think he does a great job explaining the word Expendable. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Expendable. What mean Expendable?
It's like someone who invite you to a party and you don't show up, doesn't really matter.
Okay, so he really exposed himself there. You know, that's how he feels. He just feels like, I show up every day to work, to life, to the day that it greets me, and if I didn't show up today, I think he's just talking about life in general. If I didn't exist, does anybody care? Who cares if I don't exist? I'm expendable with life in general.
And you also could see how he had a little grin out of being bashful, explaining this to a beautiful woman. He's being bashful. He's not looking at her. He's looking around. He's almost childlike in the way that he explains it in this self-deprecating way. Then he obviously deflects and goes to her necklace, as we see here.
Yeah, he points to the necklace. What's this? Gets a little bit handsy with her because he actually touches the necklace, I think. Come on, hey, hands off the clavicle there, Rambo. This is your first date, you know.
It bring me good luck. What bring you good luck?
So she asks, what brings you luck? And he brings up his knife. Cue the music.
Yes, sir.
And I know we were talking over it, but during their little dinner date conversation here, they were playing the theme of, it's a long road when you're on your own. It was the end of First Blood theme. They were playing that here to show this is a touching moment. It's a calm moment. But I love it. They reintroduced the theme and the orchestra music for that part here. Again, a little 80s, right? Which I love the 80s. You know, like, what brings you luck? And of course, that's kind of that comedy moment. This big-ass knife brings you luck. I will say to Cole, though, with your necklace bringing you good luck, I recommend you take it off in the next half hour. Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't think it brought you the luck you're hoping for. Okay, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone that hasn't seen the film. I can't imagine who hasn't.
In First Blood, the knife didn't bring Rambo any luck because that's what got him busted.
That's right. So they both have terrible, terrible good luck charms.
Yeah, terrible good, you know, yeah.
I love it.
No further report.
Rat-a-tat-tat music. I want to go up.
Right? That's great. Yeah, I didn't even catch that. That's right. The scene changed, the score changed. Now we're going back to the command central, you know, rat-a-tat-tat. And I love how Murdoch's just always just his feet are on the desk. He's munching on a sandwich. He's drinking Coke. Just laissez-faire type attitude about this whole situation. And I love his little goon guy there with the sunglasses again, standing in the background. A great side character of just a real douche. Oozes that douchiness, this guy. And of course, Erickson drinking his, Martin Coe. Have you ever met him? I think you have. You interviewed him.
We go way back. I've been to his home. Like, that's, yeah. We were buds for quite a few years, and have a lot of fun memories with Marty. He's great. That's why I was like, "Are you serious?"
To be fair, I know nobody. Okay, I don't have any quote unquote verified celebrity blue check mark celebrities in my life. So you have such a plethora that I lose track of who you know, who you've talked to. Maybe I should just probably ask, "When's the last time you talked to Martin Coe?" That's probably what I should have said. I apologize.
It's no, you're funny. Well, frankly, for about, I don't know, like 4 years, like I saw him all the time, like all the time. When Cobra Kai came out, he just got, I guess, super busy, and I haven't seen him in a few years. So we were like a few years always seeing each other at screenings and whatever, his home. I remember one time I went to his house and helped him put his shower curtain back up because it fell. Little weird stories like that. But since Cobra Kai, I just really haven't seen him. So I'd say, oh, you know what? I know the last time I saw him was John Appleton's memorial. He spoke and I spoke and several others.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Now, is it pronounced Cove or Cole? Because I've heard it both ways.
Cove. V-E. Cove.
Oh, yeah. It is the V-E is pronounced. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. So, yeah, cool. Yeah, great character actor. Yeah, I love him. But let's check out what Murdoch has to say to Troutman here about this mission.
At dawn.
Denied.
Denied.
It's an unnecessary risk.
We have a schedule to keep.
With who? We don't even know if Rambo's alive.
The odds are against it.
You said we'd go through as planned.
Okay. If you want to go through with it, we will. Colonel's going to be joining the extraction team. You're a damn good man, Troutman.
Pours his Coke. Okay, so we'll stop it there for this episode as far as the film goes. We'll talk about the scene, though. So originally, Troutman was a part of not the extraction team. The original mission was Rambo goes in, takes photos. If there's POWs found, then he was going to be part of the team that got the POWs. But now the mission has changed, of course, where they are going to extract Rambo after all. I'm a little confused by the writing here. It seems like there's two... Because Troutman was always going to be part of a team that was going to get POWs, but now I guess they're saying extraction as in just to get Rambo out, maybe.
That's how I always saw it, was that it's a way to turn on the audience. The audience doesn't know that they're not interested in extracting POWs yet. If we're led to believe that, he's saying, oh, now Troutman's going to join the extraction team. That's for the audience. Like, we don't know that they're going to turn on Rambo yet.
Okay.
So I think that's why the device is put in there in that scene. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, I might be nitpicking or looking too much into it. I just know the original mission was, if POWs were there, Troutman was going to lead the team to get the POWs. But now Rambo is lost. We don't know if he's dead or alive. We'll go to the extraction point and to get Rambo. I've asked the group if they have any questions for you. We'll just give them a chance to write any. They may or may not, but we have a few people here that might have questions for you. A lot of these listeners in Discord have listened to you on my other show, so that they've heard pretty much everything. So Tim did ask, well, he said first, Tim, he is the host, one of the hosts of the Round 14 podcast, which is a part of our Last of the Action Heroes podcast network. Great guy, fellow Canadian. He wants to know, what other projects are you bringing out soon? Now, we did talk about the beginning of the show, Tim, because he wasn't here for that. But you can go ahead and pre-plug the James Rolfe project.
Okay. And hey, Tim, how you doing? I remember you, Tim, from Instagram and whatnot. I've got my feature film Bloodstreams coming out next year that I shot last year. And then recently, my friend James Rolfe and I of Cinemassacre, you know, the angry video game nerd, We went and did a Rocky IV location hunt, which is really epic. And it should be coming out on James's channel pretty soon. And then I'm also editing another little secret type, little sly project with John Hertzfeld again. So, I got a few things happening.
I can't believe you teased that. Just reiterate what you just said, like the James Hertzfeld. I don't say what it is, but explain who John Hertzfeld is to Sly, maybe, and so people can understand how big of a thing that you're doing, what you're editing. Not what you're editing, but why that's a big deal. Like, who is John Hertzfeld to Sly?
Well, John is Sly's best friend of the last 50 years, and he directed the making of Rocky versus Drago documentary that I edited. I can't say much more, but, you know, I'm working on another small project with John that involves he and Sly. And then, I got a few things going on right now. There's actually quite a bit going on, but I would say that's actually currently what I'm working on at this very moment.
Well, all I can say is, both as your friend and as a fan of you, I'm just going to ask you again. I hope you come on my show to promote those projects when they're out, as you've done in the past with the other projects.
Yeah, I'll do whatever I can, obviously. There's so many things I got happening I just can't even think right now. There's kind of a lot on my plate, but I'll come back anytime. You know that.
Well, to quote Rocky to Adrian in Rocky 2, you ain't never getting rid of me.
I won't leave hair in the sink.
Well, you can leave hair in my sink anytime. All right, so Tim goes, wicked awesome, can't wait, Derek, thanks. Donald asks the question, he says, in the Rocky versus Drago documentary, Sly said he wanted to cut several things that were still in the final Rocky IV director's cut. How much documentary footage exists of Sly either getting frustrated or remembering why he put certain things in there in the first place?
There's a lot of footage that didn't make it into that documentary. And there's a lot of footage that didn't make it into the director's cut of Rocky IV.
You probably can't reveal anything, I bet.
No, I shouldn't. But let's just say, you know the line that Rutger Howard says at the end of Blade Runner? I've seen things, or whatever that speech is. I'll just do that. I've seen things you people won't believe. And I have. And it's fun. It's fun knowing. It's like the cat that swallowed the canary. I just know things and I've seen things, but I can't talk about it. It's fun. There's a lot that didn't make it in.
I have a question for you. This is a Ryan question. Sly has publicly, this is public, so he has publicly, I might have two questions for you, but this is public. He has publicly acknowledged that he would like to do a Rocky V edit. Now, of course, you're a big John G fan. We know that John G and Sly had struggles with the Rocky V cut on set and with the editing and the final cut, yada, yada, yada. We also know that, of course, John G. Avildsen has passed away. But MGM, I assume, would own the rights to that film. All these things are together. But Sly has publicly announced on Instagram that that is something that he would, at least he would not be opposed to doing. It's the first time I've ever seen him publicly acknowledge a re-edit, a recut of that film is not out of the question. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I mean, a few things that I think that deserves it. Number one, you know, again, I've seen the, as some of you have, I've seen the quote-unquote director's rough cut.
The work print, they call it. The work print.
Work print, which was great. And also, I know that John, there were decisions made on Rocky V. Not just, we all know the story of how the script changed and the studio came in and said, Rocky doesn't die and all that stuff. But in the actual edit itself, John, there were things that the studio did that John wasn't happy with. I won't say what, but we ran it in his house and he showed me and he wasn't happy with some of the editing. It was out of his control. So we all know Rocky V deserves better and we know that the footage is out there to make it better. Would it happen? I don't know. It was John's film, not Sly's. I don't know if that has anything to do with it contractually. I don't know if the unions have anything to do with it. I don't know. Who should recut it? Now that John has passed, Sly. He should do exactly what he did with Rocky IV. Hands down. It deserves it. I hope that Sly gets a chance to do it. It should be done. So that's my thoughts on Rocky V, hopefully getting a recut one day.
Okay, so the one question from Gert on our Discord, they said, this question I've had to, basically, where is this 3-hour First Blood film? Where is it? And why did Sly... What's your understanding of why Sly hated it so much? What was it about that cut that he hated so much?
I don't know the answer to that. We're talking about First Blood, the original First Blood.
Remember he publicly said, like, there was a 3-hour cut. I wanted to destroy the film. I thought it was going to destroy my career. And everyone who watches First Blood were like, what? How could more of this film be a bad thing? And obviously there's a gluttony to some degree, but I just can't imagine what this cut would have been that Sly would have been distraught over.
Yeah, really not sure. I don't want to speak for him. All I can say is my neat little First Blood story that you know about. I could just tell that, and maybe this could lead some insight. I don't know. For those of you who have heard these stories before, I apologize.
I don't think anyone gets sick of it. Don't worry about that.
One day I was at Sly's, and he turned on the TV, and on the AMC channel, First Blood was on the tail end of it. We watched the ending of First Blood. He just started telling me all sorts of stories and about Ted Kotcheff, the director. He kind of confirmed some questions I had, and he just kind of talked about the chaos of that production and that ending and everything. And again, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I got pretty good insight into what it was like, that working relationship, what it was like on that set, especially during the ending. So I'm assuming, this is all assumption, this is not anything I was told, but I'm assuming there were just things in there that maybe creatively there were just people butting heads. I don't know. But what they did come up with, obviously, is a perfect film. But you also have to know, and Sly knows this as a director and an editor, the audience won't miss what they never knew existed in the first place. That's the key to editing anything. When I edit, that's the number one thing that I have. So he probably knew there was, because too much can be actually bad. But 40 years on, people want to see it. We'll see. But I don't.
You're right about the editing, the little editing I do just for my podcast. Of course, I'll edit out jokes that didn't quite work or a topic that goes off too long. And then I edit that out. No one will know that was gone. And even I forget that what I edited, I'll forget. I'll go back and listen to the episode, and I'll forget what I originally had said or whatever. So people are saying thank you for sharing that. Dave is asking you, Derek, are you hot now because I made you turn off the AC? Are you okay? They wanted to make sure you're okay.
Thank you for your concern. I'm a little ripe. Well, it's cool. I'm so in tune with you guys that I'm like...
Now, of course, you were aware. This is, again, just Ryan, and you're not going to speak for Sly, but you are a fan of his and you are following him on Instagram and what have you. So again, Sly made this public, but feel free to share what you want or don't want to share regarding this. But when this comes out, it might be old news by then. But Sly, of course, recently shared his vitriol regarding Erwin Winkler and the Rocky franchise and the ownership rights and what have you. It is a side of Sly that I have never seen before. I knew that was in him because he's human and he's allowed to be human. He's allowed to have emotions. He's allowed to be upset. And he's all these things that you and I get to do in a non-public forum, he did in a public forum. So he was able to express his frustrations, his anger, and his passion towards some individuals and their family. But of course, those have since been taken down, which we can speculate all day as to why they were taken down. But what's your thoughts on the Erwin Winkler situation owning the rights of Rocky and Sly's frustration on him not owning those rights?
Well, first of all, definitely I'm not going to say anything publicly that I know or that I've heard or that I've been told or
of course
by anybody. But I just know that it's nasty. I don't think it's right necessarily. What Sylvester Stallone doesn't have enough of the iconic franchise that he created. I do think that that's a shame. That's awful. But I also don't want to comment on too much more of it because I don't know enough. I just know what I've been told and what I've been privy to. But I do think it's a shame. As far as the public lashing that he gave out, I mean, hey, he's human. He's superhuman, right? He's Sylvester Stallone. But he's human. And man, you know, he's getting on up there. And he's probably just like, hey, I'm tired of this.
Sure.
Like, this is, who cares about whatever? And I don't know. But, you know, Sly's a good man. He's a good man. And I don't know.
He's a good man. I think everyone that's a Sly fan is on the slide team. Like, this is frustrating to see somebody else owning the, like, I saw some of the comments, even some of the comments responding to me when I commented on his Instagram. People were like, oh, so you think, you know, you sell, like, I hate the business side of it. That's the part I don't like. I understand that somebody might legally own something, but that doesn't make it right, is all I'm saying. You can legally own a slave. It doesn't make it right. Okay. I understand that owning the Rocky character might be legally, contractually. It sucks for Sly, but that still doesn't make it morally right. It sucks that he doesn't have the control that he... It's just weird to me that you can create something and not own it. That's a weird concept for me, and that's my naivety maybe, but I get the frustration.
And it is a business, and that's what a lot of the fans... I try to protect the fans from giving too much of a business input, but I will say this, it is show business. It's not show art.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's just a movie. Rambo First Blood 2... First Blood Part 2 is just a movie, but they've transcended cinema and they're in our hearts and in our minds.
Right.
So they do mean more than just business. It is a shame. And I hope something gets worked out. I really do, because yes, it's a business, but at the end of the day, it's more than that. Rocky's a phenomenon. I hope Sly gets what he's due. Absolutely.
Agreed. Who drew the painting of Erwin Winkler with the snake tongue or the lizard tongue? Who drew that artwork?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's just weird. I don't know who gave it to Sly or where he got that from. He's had it for years. Or, at first, I thought he painted it, and I reread it. He didn't paint it. Somebody else painted it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't know. Okay.
I mean, we could talk forever. You and I do talk forever. I appreciate, again, your friendship, your kindness, your time with me on these shows. You've been an amazing guest throughout the years. More to come. I don't think this will be, I don't dare say, when will your last visit be on the show? Hopefully never. One last question before you go. Tim wants to know, when will we get the Derek Wayne Johnson action figure? When are we getting that one?
if that's in reference to the John Avildsen action figure that I had mentioned, hey, I would love to have a Derek Wayne Johnson action figure next to the John Avildsen one on my shelf.
I think Frank Stallone has one. Like, come on, let's be serious here. If Frank has one, you should have one.
I've got Frank's as well. He signed it. And this is funny little story. Frank gifted me his action figure, and he signed it, and I couldn't make out what he wrote. So, like, a week later, I went, took it back to him. He's like, hey, I don't really know what this says. He goes, oh, I don't either. So he just flipped it over and signed it again. So there's, like, two different signatures on that. Hey, Tim, I would love to have an action figure. If you can make that happen with those guys that did the one of John Avildsen's, more power to you. I'd appreciate it.
You know why you had to take action figure back to Frank? You should have sang the song, Take It Back. Do, take it back. You gotta give it to him. You should have said that to him.
I need to take it back. Okay. I got a little
that's
too
terrible.
Deep there.
That's terrible. One last thing before, people are going to keep typing. We're going to have to end this. So I just want to say that the action figure should be called Derek the Wayne Johnson. That's all.
You guys are making me blush over here. Yeah, it should. Yeah. I want to see that happen.
Let's make it happen. Okay, guys. Well, everyone, thank you so much for joining us on Discord. If you made it all the way through, check out all the other shows on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network. Check out my show, of course, One More Round, the Rocky Series Podcast. It's great having you on. Derek, we'll talk again. All right. All right, everyone. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, everyone.